This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hour two rolling along this morning. Glad you can be with us on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. We got the good, the bad, and the dumb coming up this hour. Connor O'Gara, our good friend from Saturday Down South, will join us. We'll talk SEC. Boy, remember when the good old days when the SEC used to just dominate everybody? It seems like that tide has changed a little bit. Florida State beat LSU. North Carolina beat South Carolina. And then Texas just beat Alabama over the weekend. Some of these SEC schools have been struggling a little bit. Is there something to this, or is it just one of those situations? I think there is a feeling like you can lose games in college football against good opponents. There's nothing wrong with that. But sometimes it is because there is something that is faulty within you, not necessarily that the other team played particularly well or much better. In the case of the Texas-Alabama game, Texas won the battle in the trenches, and Quinn Ewers was way better than people thought he was going to be against that Alabama defense. But Alabama may have a quarterback problem, and if they do have a quarterback problem, how much will it affect them throughout the season as they're trying to – I hate it when a team has – like Alabama has like a few years with it. We saw it with the Patriots too, where the Patriots wouldn't win the Super Bowl for a while. And then people were wondering, well, what's wrong? And they weren't pointing to where there's kind of new kings in town right now that have the moment. It doesn't mean they're dead. It just means that there's other people taking the spotlight because they have better teams at this particular time. Kirby Smart has a better team at Georgia than Nick Saban has at Alabama. It doesn't mean Alabama is finished. It doesn't mean the Crimson Tide's run is over, but I think people are really extreme when it comes to that because Alabama's always been around. They've gotten the benefit of the doubt on a number of occasions, and they've earned their titles, but at the same time, it's Georgia's world, and that's what happens when a team sort of takes over and wins back-to-back national championships. But it does feel like there's a vulnerability with Alabama now, whereas before, you were utterly shocked if anybody went to Tuscaloosa and beat them. But now it's like, well, I kind of wondered if Texas could actually win that game. You know, they played a close game last year and whatnot. So we'll talk to Connor O'Gara about that coming up this hour. Thursday night football tonight, the Minnesota Vikings, again, taking on the Philadelphia Eagles, and we roll into week number two. And I was saying earlier, I am curious about how this Jets team is going to rally around Zach Wilson and have that feeling of, you know what, it's still worth it to go to work. It's still worth it to try to pursue our dream of winning a championship. We may not be doing it with Aaron Rodgers. Rodgers did take to Instagram to point out that he will rise again. He said, "The night is darkest before the dawn, and I shall rise again." If you want this complete quote, here it is. "Thank you to every person that reached out, called, text, DM'd, connected through a friend, etc. It has meant a ton to me, and I'll try to get back to all of you soon." Why not? He's got plenty of free time. Now, "I'm completely heartbroken and moving all through the emotions, but deeply touched and humbled by the support and love. Please keep me in your thoughts and prayers as I begin the healing process today. The night is darkest before the dawn, and I shall rise again. Proud of my guys, 1-0. And then he did a little Jets emoji with a hashtag. Awesome. And so Rodgers plans to, you know, at this moment, come back. I said yesterday, I do believe I'm in the camp of Aaron Rodgers coming back. I think that there is nothing else that you would want to do than to push away the image of you being carted off the field as your last moment. I think when you are a professional athlete, you want to dictate the terms of your departure from the thing that is dominated for almost your entire life. When you are 6 years old and you're chucking a football in the backyard, I don't think what you want is the last thing you're known for is an injury. Sometimes you can't help it. Sometimes the injury occurs and you can't get back, and there's no opportunity to come back. Maybe the injury is so severe that and you're old, and you know the team just moves on because that's just the way the sport works. We all can't be like Alex Smith, where we nearly lose a leg on a football field. Man, he almost died from that injury with complications when he was in the hospital and then was able to earn comeback player of the year. Not everybody can do that. But I think if you can control it, meaning you sit down with your doctors and your therapists, your surgeon and everybody, and they say, all right, here's the process. We're going to do this, and then you're going to do this. And then for a long period of time, you're going to be working out like this. And then you say to yourself, you know what? That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do it because even if I can play one game, or even if it doesn't mean I have a chance to lead a team to a Super Bowl, if I can just get back, that at least for me personally will be the thing I will remember most. I will be able to dictate my terms on how I got out of this. You know, as I was talking about this earlier this week with Peyton Manning, when he was clearly not 100% when the Broncos won Super Bowl 50, but he at least left on his terms. He did it before the Broncos had to make a decision on him. And I am one of those people that believed that after that Super Bowl, the way he looked, I think the Broncos would have said, you know what, thanks for everything, we have got to move on. Even as great as he was, this is a league that just cannot be sentimental like that. It can. We say it all the time. You will be kicked out of this league before you better leave early, because there is no parade for you. There are no emotional stops for you. You better leave this league on your terms, because they will get rid of you quick, probably quicker than you think. We saw it with Brady in New England. There was always a conversation of what the future was going to be for the Patriots. They had Tom Brady, but he was 40. They had Tom Brady, he was 41. He was 42. And you kept wondering, well, what's the future? What's the plan? But you couldn't broach that discussion because Brady was still there going to the playoffs and playing in Super Bowls, even in his 40s. But in this league, it moves way quicker than you may want. The Jets are going to want Aaron Rodgers back, of course, right? That's the way it's going to be. So if you're Rodgers, it's a chance to get back, but then also at that point be able to say, I was hurt, I came back, and when I leave, I will do so at my decision. I will not leave a Hall of Fame career. My Hall of Fame career will not be over at the choice of an owner or a general manager. That's not happening. Especially when you've been in the league a long time, and you may be at your job longer than the GM was at his job. And if you reach a point in the NFL where you get to do that, that's how you want to get out of this thing. So I don't blame him one bit for saying he's going to come back, because in all, what else is he going to do, right? What else is he going to do? Is he really going to just disappear? But at the same time, at 40 years old, the body just does what the body does. You can will it to what you want it to try to do. But it's not easy. It's not a bounce. You're not 22 anymore, even when you keep yourself in great shape, right? So that's at least Rodgers' message. But as I was talking about in hour one, Robert Saleh has to play salesman. He's got to put on his sales hat. He has got to be a closer. He's got to go out there and convince you that in the end, Zach Wilson will be okay. This is coming from the organization that lost complete faith in him. What I found unique about Zach Wilson's situation was that he lost everything. He lost the faith of his coaches, his teammates, the public, everything. And yet the Jets felt there was something there enough to not do to him what San Francisco did to Trey Lance. San Francisco and John Lynch were able to say, you know what? This was a costly mistake. But it was a mistake. And the quicker I can get out of this, the quicker I can move on. And the Jets couldn't do that. They wanted to see in the end, maybe, just maybe, he needs a break. And Aaron Rodgers being ahead of you on the depth chart is a good break. But I've said this before. I think that it is something to be very careful with as fans. Not everybody is a teacher. I've said this a number of times. I wanted to get this through because I think a lot of people, especially on Twitter and social media, they kind of think that you can bring a guy in to teach a player. Some do, because some know that there is a huge drop from where they are to where the backup is, right? Aaron Rodgers can come to the Jets and teach Zach Wilson everything because he's not threatened by Zach Wilson at all, right? He knows he's the boss. He knows he's the top player in the team. Forget position. Team. So he doesn't look at Zach Wilson as a threat. If Zach Wilson is slinging it all over practice, he's not losing his job. He knows that. I'm talking about the 32-year-old wide receiver. You know, the last couple of years of his career, but he still wants to hang on. And they draft a wide receiver out of Michigan. And everyone goes, this is great because blah, 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 will be able to train so-and-so. Well, that doesn't always happen. And it doesn't happen because people are protective of their careers. They're not going to train their replacement. Who does that? This is not a factory worker looking at a robot and going, yeah, we're the same thing. They know what the deal is when they bring in robots. It's the same thing here. You are a wide receiver. You're in your 30s. You know you have a couple of years left. You still want to make some really decent money for your family, and they bring in somebody else, and now they're asking you to share your secrets. Oh, for the betterment of the team, for the betterment of the team, to make everybody better, to rise all boats. And you know what the deal is. But Rodgers did embrace Zach Wilson, because again, not a threat. And now they're banking on that as the reason to believe in this 2.0 version of a quarterback nobody believes in. And as I was talking about in hour number one, it is the fact that there is such a drop-off between the guys that can play and get you to the playoffs and win 10 games, all the way down to people who you've never heard of, all the way down to people that are playing on their fifth team, or you remember starting 2 or 3 years ago, but they've just disappeared into the depth charts of the league. Zach Wilson was a first-round pick that they thought would be a franchise quarterback. And now they're selling you that same thing they were selling you a couple of years ago at the draft. We'll see. I think the Dallas Jets game is intriguing, at least on that angle. All right, good, the bad, and the dumb next as we continue with Wake Up Call.
Wake Up Call continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, the good, the bad, and the dumb. Don't forget, Connor O'Gara will talk college football, SEC football with us coming up in a half an hour. But let's get the good of the day on a throwback Thursday.
The good of the day. It is kind of a throwback to days of past.
Okay.
In a way. But our good of the day is that the Braves have won the National League East pennant.
And that is good because...
Again. It's their 6-1 in a row.
Okay. But is there a secondary reason why that's good?
No, but there's a little bit of bad to it because nobody really knows that they've won 6 in a row.
Oh, okay.
Right? Think about it. I mean,
they've won the division 6 straight years.
They've won the divisions the last 6 straight years. Yeah.
Yeah.
And have one World Series to come out of it, which kind of reminds me of the 90s Braves.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, exactly. Because the 90s Braves went to a whole bunch of World Series and managed just one win out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I remember we had what it reminds me of, and every time I think about the Braves, now I can't help but think of our when we had a guest on and you asked him about that.
Yeah. I was like, I did. I asked him, I said, are people like old you know, Braves fans?
And they're just okay happy to be there.
They're just happy to be there. I'm like, they were one of the most dominating teams in Major League Baseball.
Yeah.
They got one win out of it.
They've won 6 straight. It wasn't a surprise that they're going to win. I mean, they had the best record in baseball. So it wasn't a surprise. It was just, you know, they finally clinched it again. But for me, the surprise was I wouldn't have been able to tell you that they've won 6 straight.
Yeah, they hit home runs all the time.
Yeah.
They're on pace to set the record for most home runs by a team that was set a couple of years ago by the Minnesota Twins.
Right. But,
and Matt Olson leads the major leagues with 51.
But out of all those wins, one World Series title.
That's it.
I think only one trip too, right?
And yeah, but here's the other thing. During that time, Washington won a World Series. Philadelphia appeared in a World Series.
Yep.
So yeah, it's very much. They've only been to one of them.
Yeah, they've only been to one.
Yeah. So yeah, in the 6 years, they've seen two other division foes who did not win the division, go on to the World Series. One of them won it in the Washington Nationals.
Yeah.
You know, and last year the Phillies were in it. So
after the Braves had won the division. Again, just going back to that, it's like, it's good. I'm glad, rack up all the NL East pennant titles you can. But I mean,
the Braves are phenomenal. They really are. I mean, they've got hitting. Spencer Strider is a Cy Young candidate this year. They've got, you know, Max Fried, Bryce Elder, Charlie Morton. I mean, they're a good team. I watch them occasionally. I get their games. They are considered Nashville's team. We're kind of halfway between St. Louis and Atlanta. It's about 4+ hours either way. A little closer to Atlanta than we are St. Louis, but Braves are the team you get. And Brandon Godden is the TV play-by-play guy for the Braves. He's the guy that was he did the Madden voiceover for a couple of years. He was the Madden voice, but he also was the play-by-play guy at like Georgia Tech and NFL on radio with, you know, whatnot. He's done enough, but he's now the Braves guy. He's good. He's really, really good. But they're really amazing. Every now and then when I throw them on, and I don't watch a full game, but I just have them on. They're great. But I don't know. I mean, when they get to the playoffs, we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see if that greatness can turn into something.
I mean, that's what the problem is.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. All right, what is the bad of the day?
The bad of the day is that O.J. Simpson and controversy will always be synonymous with each other.
Of course.
Right.
That's the rest of his life.
Recently, he appeared on the show. It's called It Is What It Is Talk.
Okay, is this a podcast?
I think it's a podcast.
A TV show, radio show?
It's either a podcast or a radio show.
Yeah. Okay.
But since there was video, I mean, it's hard to tell now.
How do people get O.J. Simpson?
I don't know. I would love to talk to him.
I would love to talk to O.J. Simpson. But how did, like, whenever I see him on these shows, how do they, who do they reach out to?
Doesn't he seem like he'd be willing to go on any show ever?
It doesn't matter.
He was on this podcast. I think it's a New York-based show. He was talking about the Jets and Aaron Rodgers going down, and this is what he had to say.
The Jets are still going to be good. They got that defense, and that kid learned a lot from Aaron. Unfortunately, 9/11 is just a bad date for New York.
Oh my gosh. This guy's, I don't know whether I want more of this or I want him to shut up.
Yeah.
Like
that one's cringeworthy.
You know
really
what I mean?
Is.
Like, but there's a part of me that like, okay, I'm going to say this, but it's going to be misconstrued. You know, like when people go to NASCAR races, they're like, I just hope everybody's healthy. But deep down, you're like, I hope I see a crash.
Yeah. Oh, right? Yeah. Yep.
It's like that with OJ. It's like when OJ's on these shows, you don't want him to say that Aaron Rodgers' injury and the death of 3,000 people are the same thing. But you kind of are hoping he does say that.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of like, I want to see the crash. Like, I want to see OJ fall apart and say something dumb and ridiculous. Like, that's what I want.
Yeah, I mean, this was the dumb until I found a better dumb that I think is a...
You found a better dumb than O.J. This is going to be great.
Well, that's why I said I put this as bad.
Okay, bad. This is bad, yeah.
This is just...
This is awful. That is awful.
Yeah. I think because this was more bad than dumb. It's definitely a dumb comment. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But I think it's just more bad than dumb. I mean, the worst part about it, too, I cut it off because they don't really need it. Yeah, you know, the three guys who are hosting the show were all laughing at the comment. But it was, again, I'll go back to what you just said. I don't know if they're laughing because they got what they were hoping for.
Right. They exactly. Like, just let OJ have a microphone and he will... He'll just
ask a simple question. He will find his way there.
Yep.
And he did. I mean,
he'll do it himself.
Yeah.
Exactly.
9/11 is just a bad day for New York. I mean, you know, Aaron Rodgers and, you know, that other thing incident.
He really believes that there's kids that will look up at their grandpa or father and go, tell me about 9/11. Which one? The one with the planes. Oh, okay. You're not talking about Aaron Rodgers? Okay, just want to make sure.
That was a bad day. Don't get me wrong. That was a bad day, but...
Yeah. Don't worry, son. Both of them were horrific.
But Aaron going down.
But yeah, like that's what OJ thinks. Like OJ thinks that there'll be people equating these two events as equal. Like, where were you when kind of thing.
Yep.
Golly. And you're right. He goes on everything. There's a clip that was in... the documentary Made in America that I always remember was there was this radio show and he went on this radio show and this woman was hosting the radio show and she goes, OJ, I can't hate you, OJ. I tried. I can't. He is so charming. And the thing about it, he knows that. And I think that's what he is banking on, is that he is banking on, the more I'm on anything I can get in front of. That's why he's doing his own videos on Twitter talking fantasy football and NFL football or whatever he wants to talk about, is he knows he's charming enough that there's a generation that wasn't alive, that just heard he may have killed two people but got acquitted for it, where the details are just becoming clouds because it's what their parents remember, and he's winning them over.
Yep.
Like, you and I talk about him all the time. When he's on Twitter and he does something, you get the knife, murder.
Oh yeah,
get away with murder jokes. They're all in there.
Oh, he's killing it again.
Killing it again, right? And then there are the people who go, "Keep it up, Juice. Love your stuff, man. You do what you do, right?" He's like, I'm never going to win this group, but I can win over this group. And if I win over this group, I'll be all right. And he knows he's charming enough to do that. It's crazy. I mean, it's absolutely crazy.
I mean, you want to know what a comment is? A comment is this. This is a new low. I don't know. This guy literally murdered somebody. I think he's had worse lows than this.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
But
you're right. Yeah.
You know, I mean, but if he's innocent, this is a pretty big low.
This is a pretty big low. If indeed he's in it, in the world where OJ didn't do this. Yeah.
Still think, I think the best thing about OJ is him coming out with a book.
Oh, If I Did It?
If I Did It.
Remember that? Yeah.
I mean, how do you not look at that and go, oh, it's a confession.
I know. He talked about like an alter ego. I think he named him Charlie in that book, where he was trying to control Charlie, but Charlie couldn't be controlled. That's kind of what he was explaining. If I did it, this is how I would have done it, with this like alter ego. It was crazy dumb. It's crazy dumb.
How about this? Yeah. How about this back and forth? Because we love going to Twitter comments. Whose idea is it, or whose idea was it to let him take a stab at an interview?
Now, see, exactly. That's
and
what
then
I'm talking
the
about.
First response, really? I thought he killed it.
Yeah, see? Exactly.
It's always. But, yeah, you know, the history, the annals of history will show 9/11 being the worst day for New York.
Absolutely. Man, OJ, what are we doing here? Unreal. All right, we'll continue. It's Wake Up Call. We got the dumb, and then we got Connor O'Gara to talk some SEC football as we roll along this morning on a throwback Thursday in which we are celebrating 80s TV shows. Yes, 80s TV shows as we continue with Wake Up Call.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
MacGyver?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, 80s TV. What a brilliant show this was.
This was one of my favorites growing up.
I know
I have watched every single episode of MacGyver.
The idea of taking like a guy that can make a bomb out of like gum and a toothpick was crazy. Like, all he needed was gum, a toothpick, and maybe a bit of thing, and he could create a small explosive that could get him out of a locked cell.
Yep.
Like, that's what he could do.
I still, to this day, there was one episode, his radiator, he was trying to escape, and the Jeep radiator was leaking, right? Because it had taken some gunfire.
Yeah.
And so there were bullet holes in the radiator, so it was leaking water. He took eggs and just cracked open an egg, put it in there, and that created a seal just enough for him to get away.
Do you think that show could survive with social media today?
Well,
do you think the writers kind of took some liberties? Like, okay, that's not really gonna
there's
work,
there was the cares? Reboot, and it didn't really offer as many of those gimmicky yeah. things that he did. I mean, he still did science and worked science in his favor and did a lot of things, but it wasn't as it wasn't the, hey, I got a rubber band, a paper clip, duct tape, and 10 ounces of soda. What can I do? Well,
right,
I can do
exactly.
this. Watch.
Yeah. And like, I want to know who wrote, like, how many science people were on staff. Like,
there had to be a few. And I do know this.
Have to be.
I do know this about MacGyver, that anytime he made a bomb, there was always one component left out.
Oh, right, because they didn't want you to really want you make to, a bomb.
Yeah, they didn't want you to reenact it. And if you know, if
they
you
want kids making like small bombs in school with
exactly.
household items.
Like, right. Oh, all I need is this and this and this. Great.
Yeah, exactly. But see, in social media today, they would say, like, you really can't do that. Like, but back then, we just went, yeah, I guess we could crack an egg in the radiator and it would create a seal. Sure.
Yeah.
When the TV show should have came with a disclaimer saying, no, actually, you want to get your car to a mechanic as soon
but
as possible.
But back then, you didn't need disclaimers.
Right. No, you didn't.
Because you weren't really going to try
really
it anyways.
You weren't really going to crack an egg in your radiator. After it got filled with bullet holes.
Right.
Oh, what a show. What a show. By the way, the reason we're doing 80s themes, Golden Girls debuted on this date in 1985, and it's becoming significant again in the pop culture world. But we have got the dumb of the day.
The dumb of the day. You know, it's been a bad week for Alabama football.
Yes, it has.
And so the dumb of the day goes to them. Because they were so proud in posting their video of their pregame meal before they traveled down to Tampa this week.
Right.
Did you see the photo?
No.
The photo is just an alligator, just a gator, just completely like a carcass of a gator. Somebody brought in a gator, barbecued it, cooked it up, and there's just shredded meat from this gator overall. And it didn't take long for social media to point out that, guys, you're playing South Florida.
The Bulls.
Yeah. You could have had hamburger.
You could have had steak. You could have had filet. You could have had a New York strip.
You could have saved
you
the gator.
Could have had a porterhouse.
Could have saved the gator for when you actually play Florida.
Yeah, when you play Florida, break out the barbecued gator. But South Florida, yeah. They don't care.
I just, you know, though, I'm just bringing this up because, I don't know, is Saban slipping?
That's what I'm wondering. That's why we got Connor O'Gara coming on the show.
Yeah.
Is the time now to move on?
I mean, I get, you know, Gator, Florida, you know, they're kind of synonymous with one another. And, that you know, Gators, in my mind, because I haven't traveled to Florida that much, I think there's a Gator in every pond and stream
yeah,
that
there pretty
is in
much
Florida.
Is.
Is there?
Pretty much is, yeah.
I mean, just they're everywhere.
If there's water, there's a good chance there is. It's not guaranteed, but you would never go, oh, Gators aren't in this part of town. No, they're everywhere. They're everywhere.
Even in the cities, right?
Yeah, they
could
be
just cruising around.
They could just walk down the city streets.
Yeah.
Downtown.
So I figured they're as common as birds.
Yeah. No, my wife and I, we lived in an apartment when we were dating, and there was a pond, and I used to ask her all the time, I was like, is there gators in that pond? She goes, probably. I'm like, where do they come from? She goes, everywhere. They just, there's a source of water.
See, it is weird, because where I live, you know, it's not as common, but there's been one pond. And there's been a couple. I mean, every pond that's in neighborhoods has a sign, but every once in a while you'll see one.
Yeah,
and it's kind of cool, but at the same time, it's like, man, you know, this guy could probably eat me.
Right. I made a joke, but I was in seriousness. I was actually a little concerned back in 2020 when I took my son down to visit the University of Florida campus and see his dorm. We kind of went on a little summer trip there. And we were walking from his dorm to like where the student union is. And there's a sign that says, do not feed the gators. And it was like a border where it was swampy and had a lot of trees and vegetation. So please do not feed the gators. And I went, wait, the reason they have that sign is because there are gators for you to feed.
Yeah.
Potentially. Like as we're walking along a pathway that's right next to the vegetation. And I'm like, this thing could jump out and get us. Gomp. You know, could just jump right out and go, that's a meal. I'm taking him. And then you find out that they're not that aggressive. They're not crocodiles. Like, crocodiles are more aggressive. But, yeah, they're creepy, man. They're creepy.
No, they are. That's just, it's that prehistoric look.
Yeah.
That's
exactly what it is.
Dinosaur look in them that, you know, just, you can't trust them. I mean,
there's a little one that walks around the dorm where my son lived, and they called him the Simpson Hall Gator. And he's kind of famous. People take pictures of him all the time. He walks around. Now, he's not a huge one. He's a little one. But someday he's going to be a big one.
Okay. What's little?
Yeah. Little is like a couple feet, like 4 or 5 feet.
Yeah. That's little.
Yeah. Right?
Size of a grown man, but it's
but
little.
One day he's going to be a giant. They're going to bring in the wildlife people. My son tells me he goes to this place called Lake Alice. He goes, I go to Lake Alice to read. Like, it's beautiful. He's like, they got these great picnic tables and it's beautiful. He goes, I'll go there to read. He goes, you look out in the water and they'll just pop their head up. I go, run. He goes, no, man, they're not going to do anything. I go, what are you, insane? What, hey, like,
Tony, they just popped up and go, what you reading?
Well, yeah, what you reading?
Hey, maybe I can
physics?
Help.
I might be able to help.
Read a little to me.
He goes, my God. He goes, like three or four of them will just pop their head up.
And you know what the other problem is that you never see a good video of a gator. I think that's the other issue.
No, that's the other thing, right?
Every video you see, right as we were talking, I get an alert on my phone from the Weather Channel app that I have on my phone. And it said, a Texas lake had, you know, their parents ran down at a Texas lake because shrieking kids were in the lake and a gator was just slowly paddling towards them.
Yeah, right.
It's like, you know, just like, yeah, there we go.
That's it.
You know, I mean, I think it's just, has there ever been a good gator character other than Bo from Animal Olympics?
Yeah.
What's his name, Bo?
I think, from Laugh Olympics.
No, Animal Olympics.
What's Animal Olympics?
Animal Olympics. You don't remember that cartoon?
I remember Laugh Olympics.
What's Laugh Olympics?
Laugh Olympics was a bunch of Hanna-Barbera cartoons competing in events.
Oh, this wasn't that. This is called Animal Olympics. It was a cartoon. It was just made up a character. Billy Crystal was a voice of one of the announcers.
Oh, really?
And Gilda Radner, I believe, was too.
Okay. Yeah, this was a 1980 film. A 1980 animated TV series. I remember Laugh Olympics. So we got two totally different cartoons.
Animal Olympics. I mean, it was the 80s. Came out for the 84 Olympics.
You're right. Gilda Radner, Billy Crystal, Harry Shearer, and Michael Fremer.
Yeah. There Billy Crystal did his Howard Cosell impersonation.
Oh, very good.
And one of the characters is a gator who's a pole vaulter.
I never thought Billy Crystal's Howard Cosell impression was very good.
Nah.
I thought his Muhammad Ali was better, but I never thought his Howard Cosell was good. Because I thought it was a little too high. But nevertheless, gators are scary. I'm sorry, they're scary.
Yep. And Alabama, I mean,
you can eat them all you want, but it has no effect. And you know what? That's the we just mentioned it. If you're a player on that team, and I hear gator, I've never eaten gator meat. I hear it's not bad.
It's not bad. I've had it.
It's not terrible. My son has eaten it. He says, Dad, you wouldn't even know. If you ate gator meat, you would not know you were eating something.
No, if somebody, for me, I haven't had it barbecued. I've only had it deep fried.
Yeah.
And it literally, you know, was like it was mixed in with chicken fingers.
Right,
and
right.
I didn't. It was just like
he said, you wouldn't even
know. The meat's a little different.
Right.
The taste isn't.
So, but nevertheless, sometimes the psychological effect kicks in and you're like, ugh, even if it has no taste, like you just go, oh, I still can't eat this. So the kids ate gator and they were like, okay, some probably liked it. Some probably didn't like it. And then when they find out they're playing South Florida, the Bulls, and they thought, I could have had a T-bone steak.
Yeah.
We could have had all sorts of cool stuff with bull and steaks.
Missed an opportunity.
We missed
really?
An opportunity. We missed a complete opportunity. We could have had all sorts of great. We could have had smash burgers. We could have had fillets. We could have like all of that stuff. Instead, we had to eat gator meat.
Yeah.
And it is nothing to do with the game we're playing.
I mean, the only people who have issue with eating beef are vegetarians and PETA.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, any football player would probably goes like, yeah, I'll choose a steak over gator anytime.
Some of those guys would eat two or three porterhouses.
Of course.
Right? Yeah. All right, Connor O'Gara, Saturday Down South, will join us next. Does the SEC have a problem in week three of the season? That may be an overstatement, but some of these teams are not popping like we thought they would. Next.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, it's our Throwback Thursday. We're doing 80s TV themes. Golden Girls debuted on NBC on this date, but, you know, this is Knight Rider. If you grew up in the 80s, this was the best show on TV. It's a talking car, for crying out loud. Connor O'Gara joins us on a Progressive Guest Line, Saturday Down South, talk football, mostly SEC football. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. You know, I can't weigh in on that subject as someone who was born in 1990.
That's
so,
right.
Yeah.
You didn't get the joy of growing up watching a guy drive a talking vehicle that could drive itself and you could play Pac-Man in it if you wanted to. It was unbelievable. What a joy it was. That was crazy. It was a crazy show. All right, let's get to the SEC. I I don't want to overblow this, but I have you on for this reason. When you are on the top, people want to take shots. And when you have a couple of weeks where Florida State's beating LSU and North Carolina, albeit a ranked North Carolina team, beats South Carolina, and Alabama's losing at home to Texas, the shots are coming. Is that a real thing? Is there some concern that the SEC is down this year after 3 weeks?
Yeah, I think that there's no denying the SEC has had a bad season so far. The best SEC win is Ole Miss winning against a group of five team that had a backup quarterback. I mean, Think about that. That's where we're at right now. And that's not to take anything away from what Tennessee did against Virginia. But Virginia is a very overmatched team. A team that was playing with heavy hearts in the state of Tennessee. So, like, look, I think that it's perfectly fair to say the SEC has been really disappointing. How many SEC teams feel better than where they felt in the month of August? Think about that.
Right.
How many teams actually feel like their team has at least met expectations? Even Ole Miss, like, that was a dogfight last week, and they really had to dig deep to be able to come out with that victory. The final score didn't really indicate that. And you kind of look up and down the conference, you're like, man, so many of these teams have just gotten off the slow starts in very winnable games. And then obviously the Power Five games, it's not just that, you know, the SEC came up on the short end of these. Like, LSU got blown out by Florida State. I was at that game. I was dominated. They got dominated in the second half. Bama lost by double digits to Texas and Florida, losing to a backup quarterback against Utah. Like, you just look up and down these games, you're like, yeah, the SEC's been disappointing, and it's perfectly fair to point that out.
All right, let's get to Alabama. Now, sometimes you can lose and it not be indicating of anything that may be wrong. You just lost a football game. But what is wrong with Alabama? They lost in the trenches in that game, but what else is wrong with Alabama?
It's a complacent football team. It's as simple as that. This was a team that all year we heard about, hey, this is, or all offseason rather, we hear about the disrespect. J.C. Latham gets to SEC Media Day, says, you know, we're being disrespected. We're going undefeated. We're winning a national championship. How dare you doubt us, blah, blah, blah. And then they play that game against Texas, and Tyler Booker goes on with my friends at the next round and talks about how they took winning for granted, and they didn't have a good week of practice, and they weren't really ready to go for this one. I'm like, it was Texas. This is the game that everybody's been talking about all year. What are you doing? You can't get up for this one, and if you're going to be that undisciplined, man, I just have some serious questions about you. And I was the one saying, I think Alabama's going 11-1. They're going to get to the SEC championship. And now I'm looking at this going, man, I don't think there's any way that they're going to run the table the rest of the regular season and get to Atlanta. This is a very flawed team right now that doesn't have any one specific thing that they can truly hang their hat on to pull them out of these moments, much like what they had last year in the year before with Bryce Young, obviously.
You mentioned the LSU-Florida State game. I'm like a lot of people. I was blown away how dominant Florida State was at the end of that game. What was the problems with LSU? How did a tight game turn into a walk away for Florida State?
LSU was arrogant, and it wasn't physically tough enough, and it overshot things. I mean, is that enough for you? Like, this is a more flawed team than people were realizing, because even in the midst of their turnaround last year, they still got waxed by that Texas A&M team that was 4-7. And they still got absolutely embarrassed that night. And we kind of overlooked that. We overlooked the issues that they had in the secondary. And everybody, you know, was talking about this Jaden Daniels buzz. And for him to be number two in the preseason Heisman odds, I was like, what are we doing here? I got mocked for saying that LSU was going to lose two games in the month of September. Now, I thought one of them would be against Florida State. I didn't think they'd get blown out. But their issue is they don't really have a lot of offensive flow. And when the running game is still so predicated on Jaden Daniels being able to scramble and not necessarily having more of a traditional rushing attack. And then the experiment with Harold Perkins as an off-ball linebacker so far has been a failed one. And you've taken your best possible asset and you've neutralized him because of a decision that you made. So, yeah, I think LSU just has a lot more flaws than a lot of people cared to admit when they were picking them to go to the playoff in the preseason.
When you Texas A&M and Jimbo Fisher had problems last year, and it's continuing this year, losing on the road to Miami. Where are they with Jimbo Fisher? What's the pulse or what's the temperature in College Station between that fan base and that administration and that head coach?
They're in college football hell. That's what they're in. They're in hell because there are 76.8 million reasons why Jimbo Fisher is not getting fired.
Yeah.
Okay. Like this isn't, oh, he loses one game. Now he's fired. Now, I think what's really depressing is to look at Miami, where they were at last year, and to think, wow, they're already ahead of A&M in year six, a team that we were once talking about 2023 being a championship window because of how good that 2022 class was and how historic it was. And the irony is that I think offensively they look great. I love what I've seen from Connor Wigman so far, and I've been so impressed with him and running the Bobby Petrino offense, and they're finally doing the things that they did not do the last 2 years. So, like, from that standpoint, it's great, but defensively, they're just a total disaster. And for a group that has that much talent, it's really unexcusable. And to me, like, that's the bigger issue, and it's probably more like, you know, they could be getting back to an 8-4 type team. I think they're still going to improve this year, because when you're 5-7, the only way you have to go is up. But it's a problem, and it's going to be more about Jimbo Fisher having basically the lowest possible approval rate for a head coach heading into year seven.
Is there any team, and it's only 2 weeks in, some of these teams haven't really played anybody, but is there anybody popping just based on your analysis and saying, you know what, I know they've played these two teams, they should have won by double digits, but this team is actually looking better than I thought, or however you're defining it?
Yeah, definitely no one in the SEC that's looking better than I thought. I mean, it's difficult because I think, yeah, and this is going to be kind of nerdy, but like Arkansas's passing game is the one to keep in mind and see how it looks this weekend against the BYU team that they put up over 600 yards of offense against. But like KJ Jefferson taking that next step, I've been saying all offseason KJ Jefferson's the best quarterback in the SEC. He's one of the best quarterbacks in all of college football. I love that dude. He's taking that next step in Dan Enos' offense, despite the fact that they lost Rocket Sanders week one, and they had obviously real running game issues so far in that offensive line that Sam Pittman has expressed concern about. But KJ and a very unproven group of receivers has looked really, really good. And if they continue that in week three, I think that'll be a testament to his maturation and his ability to handle this new scheme.
It feels weird to look at the SEC standings and go, all right, we're 3 weeks in, we're really early, and yet there's only one team with a single digit next to its name. And that's Georgia.
Yeah,
everyone else is 10 or below.
Yeah, it's 2016. That's
right.
That's what the
good point
is, right? Yeah, like 2016 is kind of the feel where like Alabama was heads and shoulders the best team in college football that year. And you remember like LSU losing the season opener against Wisconsin, and it was a bunch of disappointing teams that season. A&M was super disappointing. Auburn was really disappointing. And you kind of look up, they're like, all right, it's just Bama and everybody else. And it just kind of feels like that sort of year with the SEC, and who knows? I mean, the SEC will probably send somebody to the national championship yet again, because that's what they always do. But you're still kind of wondering, like, man, this is just not the depth that we thought it was going to be this year.
Real quick, and I got a minute, but I wanted to ask you about Texas, because they are coming to the conference next year, and people have been saying, hey, Steve Sarkisian has been recruiting for SEC play. Are you buying that? Is it what you saw from them, a coach that knew what was coming down the line and said, look, we're going to enter this conference like Texas A&M and Missouri did, playing well as soon as we get there?
Yes. There's no question. If there was a question that we wanted to have answered last weekend in Tuscaloosa, that was it right there. Can this team really go toe-to-toe with an SEC contender, a national championship contender? And they did, and they punched him in the mouth.
They did.
Their ability to rush the passer, to me, like, and how good they looked in the trenches, that confirmed what we've been saying. Like, this is a Texas offensive line that returned to everybody. And if you're going to return to everybody, you better look like that. And they did. And to me, like, they answered that question in such an emphatic way, in a way that Oklahoma didn't, even when they were getting to the college football playoff year in, year out. And I think any questions that we had about whether or not Texas was going to be ready for the SEC was answered in a pretty big way in Tuscaloosa.
Connor O'Gara, Saturday Down South. Always good talking to you, my friend. I know we'll do that down the road. I really appreciate it, my man.
Absolutely. Appreciate it, man.
You got it, Connor O'Gara. And yeah, look at Texas A&M did this too. I mean, Texas A&M and Missouri were two teams that got into the SEC and they got told, yeah, it's going to take you years before you're any good. This is a whole different world, kids. That Big 12, oh, just push that aside. That's baby football. Wait till you get here. Missouri, in a blink of an eye, was playing in the SEC tie, winning the East, winning a weak East. And Texas A&M came in with Johnny Manziel, beat Alabama, played Alabama tough the next year in College Station. So Texas, again, like he said, showed, hey, if we knew what we were going to be heading into, and they have done that and showed up in Tuscaloosa last weekend.